Today on North State Give and Take, I'm going to interview Max Steiner, and Max is running for Congress. So Max found me, and I am so happy you did. Welcome, Max.
Well, thank you very much, Bobby, for having me on. I am the District 1 Democratic candidate for Congress. The district covers basically the whole northeast corner of the state from Yuba City to the Oregon border.
Yeah, that's one thing I wanted to be sure I got a picture of. On the east side of California, though.
We're basically the 99 and I-5 corridors from Yuba City and Colusa all the way up north. And then we have Lassen and Modoc on the eastern side of the Sierra. So the old district map, which changed in 2020. So this will be the first election with the new district map. Our District 1 used to include basically the western side of Nevada County and all the way down to Auburn. Now we do not include Plumas County at all. We do not include Nevada County at all. We do not include Auburn at all. But we do include new places, Yuba City, Marysville, and Colusa, and Glen. And
okay. Which is a pretty good population.
Well, yeah. So every district in California, every congressional district has the same number of people, about 740,000 people. And so there are 52 districts. We are not quite, actually, I think we are the largest. We're tied for the most counties.
And does each one have one representative?
So each congressional district has one representative.
Okay. Yeah. And in our case, it's Doug LaMalfa at this time.
So Doug LaMalfa is the incumbent, and I am running against him.
Okay. And how long has Doug been doing that?
So Doug has been a congressional representative for 10 years now. And before that, he was a state representative for 10 years.
A couple of things that I did want to clear up, this word centrist. And I think that you'll probably be able to kind of bring that together when I say, Max, tell me about yourself.
Yeah. So the centrist term, it is actually the more doctrinally correct term to use instead of moderate, but you can basically think of it as moderate, right? So it's very much a political science term. I was a diplomat before this, so I use these terms, but most people, because now I've talked to, a lot of people, like we've handed out over 20,000 handcarts. And I'm at the fairs. I'm at the Shasta County Fair today, and I'll be at Yuba Senator Fair as well. But centrist, the difference is not large. And if you want to think of it as a moderate Democrat, that's fine. We won't get into a definitional.
Okay.
But basically, I think that good policies come from the center. I think that the extreme left and the extreme right are a disservice to the United States. I think that a centrist Democrat, a moderate Democrat, is someone who looks at people and says, hey, you actually do disagree with me. It's not that you don't understand everything. It's not that I can convince you to change your mind. It's that I can convince you to see that I'm a principled person. I have thought through these issues and we have come to different conclusions, but let's take, what's close to a middle road that kind of works for everyone. And I think, I hope that people are ready for that kind of politics again. Because that is the kind of politics that made our country very strong in the post-World War II consensus. There was this idea that we had to pull together, that we had to do things together as a country. And it wasn't, I'm going to score points for the Democrats or I'm going to score points for the Republicans. And so, being a centrist means I understand that we are all Americans and that we have very divergent views and that we will never get to the point where we have monolithic views because, well, what would be the point of democracy if we all thought the same thing anyway, right? Like, that's no,
right.
There's no reason, right? But it's this understanding that we'll make some incremental changes and we'll make some changes that not everyone loves, but that are better for the country.
Got it. And that, and your diplomatic experience probably helped you get to that place.
I hope so. Yeah, I do think, being a diplomat, I've obviously studied other governments and how they work and don't work. But yes, I think, you know, it's sometimes it's nice to have someone who's looked at a problem but isn't of the problem. But I was also a soldier before. I will say, I think that's probably informed my ideology a little bit more, because being an American soldier, like, one, you're a Democrat in the Army. You are the minority. So CD1, not new to me, right? But, you know, it's also this idea that, like, in the Army, everyone's on the same team. And that is something that is missing from Congressional District 1. Like, in Congressional District 1, we have these camps, you know, these partisan camps where there is Team Red, there's Team Blue, and then there's Team Darker Red. It's really interesting, but that's not the case, obviously. Like, when you're in a Humvee in Iraq driving around and you're having a political debate, you know, like, it's in good nature, right? Like, that is a pause in the debate that goes from, like, what's your favorite music to who's the hottest model. You know, late 2000s, hot girls, right? Top popular topic in any Humvee conversation in Iraq. But then, you know, like, you talk about politics as well, because you're in the car with these people forever. And you know that in 30 seconds, you know, one, you could all be obliterated. Or two, you know, you could all be getting out of that car and returning fire and maneuvering on objective. You know, I think there is something to be said of a shared military experience. I think that did make our country stronger after World War II. I think it made us stronger after the Civil War. We have the lowest percentage of veterans in Congress since World War II. So in over like 70 years now. And I think that the relationship between hyper-partisan politics and fewer veterans, I think there's something there, right? Mm-hmm. I think when veterans go to war together, you know, Republicans and Democrats, it doesn't matter. And when those people get out of the Army and go to Congress together, they still have that shared experience and that shared knowledge that, hey, you put up, right? You're not some guy cashing a check. You're not some empty politician who staffed for someone or whose dad got him onto a couple water boards and then he got elected to the assembly and then he went to Washington, and this whole idea of government service is getting payments from the government. That is obviously, you know, what I think of Doug LaMalfa, right? Like, Doug LaMalfa's entire political career has been just, I have inherited this spot and I have got this spot because I am a rich farmer and I'm gonna go and I'm gonna represent rich farmers. And I wanna go and represent Americans because I've represented Americans before. And I think America is at a turning point, and I think that I can do a better job than LaMalfa.
I didn't think of it this way, but you're in the military, you're sort of forced to get along.
Yeah, exactly. But it's also like there's so much more you know of someone that's not their politics.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize that someone's political beliefs are just a small part of who they are. That you can get along with someone completely on politics, but they might be a dirtbag soldier and you just don't want them on their team. And you might like hate someone's politics, but they're crack shot and you're like, I want this guy in my truck. I think that's really important to understand. And I think that's something that's kind of missing in America today, where a lot of people judge others just on kind of a one-dimensional yes or no.
Yeah. Well, it must be interesting just speaking with people. I mean, that when I think about politics, so much of it has to do with how you get along and how you communicate with people. It must be, you know, just quite an interesting journey to speak with people who don't agree with you. You know, the people that do agree with you, that's probably an easy conversation. But the one when they don't is probably, you know, take some skill.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's patience and respect. That is basically the fundamentals of talking to anyone. And yeah, that's what I try to do. You know, find, you know, there's also like, hey, find something that you agree on, right? Like, don't start every conversation on a hot button issue, right? We all care about forest fires. We all care about water. You know, these are pressing issues for everyone in the district. You know, not everyone's lost a house to fire. Like, I'm right now in my brother's house in Reading. And burned by the car fire, and it is brand new, but it was very traumatic. Everyone who either knows someone or knows of someone who's lost something in fire, and that's our district right now. You know, like that is an effect of poor forest management. It's an effect of Forest Service that's just under-resourced and kind of, I think, has the wrong ideology for the time. And it's also an effect of climate change, right? So you've got all these things coming together at the same time, and we've had massive fires. You know, for the last 3 years, we had Camp Fire and Car Fire. We had the North Lake Complex. We had the Dixie Fire and the Caldor Fire. You know, this is something that needs to change. And Doug LaMalta has not delivered. You know? So when I talk to people, you know, I'm sorry, just not to change the subject, but like I typically talk about fire. I talk about issues that unite us rather than issues that divide us. And obviously, people will bring up divisive issues, you know, like, hey, what do you think about Roe v. Wade? But someone will ask me that and I'll say, well, I'm pro-choice, right? And sometimes I will say like, well, I'm pro-life, bye, have a good life, you know, I hate you.
Yeah.
Fine, you know, like, and sometimes you'll get like, well, you know, like I'm pro-life, like let's have a discussion. I've had a number of good discussions about Roe v. Wade. No one has changed each other's minds. That's not the point of a discussion. Like, hey, are you a good person? Do you have a at least ideologically consistent point of view? I will say, as an aside, libertarians who think they're like pro-life are a very interesting like group to me, right? So I've had that conversation a lot in the past couple of days at Shasta. People are like, I'm a libertarian, but I'm pro-life. It's like, well, so you're kind of telling you want the government to have control over women's reproductive rights. That's not very libertarian. Let's be honest with ourselves. You're conservative, and that's okay. You're allowed to be conservative in America, but don't pretend to be a libertarian. We're not for, you know, individual liberties. So it's always interesting, but that's just kind of a, you know, people label themselves in weird ways sometimes, almost like it's a costume and it doesn't really match them. And sometimes when you're talking to someone, you find that out and it's kind of a, not tense moment, but, you know, like, how do I tell this guy that he's not a libertarian? Right? How do I tell this guy that this guy is just a conservative, right? And like, maybe you should, you know, like, that's fine. I have no problem with that. I'd still love to represent you. I'd love to earn your vote. I think that I'm a more principled conservative than Doug LaMalta. But, you know, like, you're not a libertarian, right? So that's always interesting. Talking to people, you know, more people should. I think that, you know, like, we are in a democracy. We do live in a place where our vote matters. And that's really important. It's one of the main reasons I'm running. But you should talk to your neighbors sometimes about just like how they see themselves politically. Because I think often it's considered like, you know, don't talk politics or religion. And like, no, these are parts of who you are.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, there's a lot of issues and you're never going to all agree, but you're right. It's the person that represents you. Do you trust they will listen?
Right.
That's about it. You'll listen. You know, carry the democratic ideals.
Yeah, and the small d democratic ideals. But in my big D democratic ideals as well, right? So like not just democracy, but the Democratic Party. And so I agree. I have to convince people that not only are these my beliefs, but that you can trust me to do them. And where I think a lot of people are too trusting in politicians, right? Or they're just like, oh, all politicians lie. That's not true, right? I mean, like, change the guys out then. Like, just keep, always vote against the incumbent. If you think all politicians lie, always vote against the incumbent. But otherwise, you don't just vote for the guy that tells you what you want to hear. And I do think that is a big problem in America, in the left and the right. And obviously, I'm running in a conservative district. And so I think Doug LaMalta often tells people what they want to hear and then delivers nothing. But I fully recognize that my own party has people that do that in other districts that are deep blue. I wish that there were voters who would say, I disagree with this guy, but I think he's going to do what he, or more voters who said, I disagree with this guy, but I think he's going to do what he actually says. And I understand why he says what he says. And so I'm going to vote for him, right?
Yes.
But I guess we'll see. We will see in November.
We will see. Yeah. And it's interesting how you can grab onto one issue and be stuck right there as a voter.
Yeah, I do think single issue voting, I understand it. So I'm Catholic. I was raised very Catholic. Like I was an altar server at the cathedral in Sacramento. But I'm pro-choice, right? But I understand people, especially conservative Catholics, who are pro-life. And that's like a fine conversation. You know, like I can go to the pro-life booth or to the right to life booth and say, hey, like we disagree on this, but there are other aspects. And they're like, well, I'm a single issue voter. And it's like, you got it. No problem. Yep.
Yeah.
But I do think it's kind of dangerous, right? Because there's so much more to being an American than that. And so I'm not a single issue voter. I never have been. And I think that every time someone just collapses their whole political identity down to one issue, you know, that there's a lot of variety in politics. You should kind of take a step back and think, like, who and what do I want out of my government right now?
You're listening to an interview with Max Steiner on North State Give and Take, and we'll be right back. Back to our interview with Max Steiner, running for Congress in this district against Doug LaMalfa, and he is talking about voting.
And it's also bad, you know, and I say this, you know, when a Democrat says, oh, of course I'm going to vote for you. I'm a Democrat. Great. You know,
yeah.
It's like, you don't want to know at all. I could be, I don't know what a politician would do. Like, actually everything, like straight up communism or something. And it's like, oh, I'm a Democrat, I vote for you. You know, like, no, you should probably ask a politician what yeah. positions are. I'm like, one or two things that you think are important. Just yeah. to get a sense, like, can this guy, like, think coherently? Can this guy answer? Yeah. I like, how does this guy talk?
Yeah.
But it, a lot of people just want that. Are you on my team or the other team? And that's it. And that is not a functioning, that's not a good recipe for a functioning democracy. Right.
Well, I feel as though it really is a matter of talking to somebody. And sometimes the whole system seems so big that you can't actually have a conversation with someone who's going to represent you. So I like that we're able to actually have you here as a person. Okay. And I also see how that makes it easy for people to say things like, all government, you know, all politicians are crooks. The government's never going to do anything. The government never does anything. It's easy to flip over into that. And I think a lot of us have.
Yeah, you know? I definitely having talked to voters, oh, my vote doesn't matter. Or, you know,
yes.
people that you want to get registered. It's like, you know, well, if you're not going to vote for me, at least vote for someone or vote for local issues that you really care about. And they're like, nah, my vote doesn't matter. It's like, I guarantee your vote matters in like city council election, right? Like yep. those are typically decided by a couple hundred votes. So you can say, and I think it's wrong, right? That like, oh, my vote doesn't matter for a presidential election or for a congressional election. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, big numbers scare people. I get it. But it does matter. It's what democracy depends on. It's what yeah. all citizenry. So yeah. I do encourage everyone to get on your phones right now if you're not registered and just Google.
Oh, yeah.
State, you know. Registration, yeah. you do it online. You just need to have your driver's license number and stuff. And then they'll confirm it with you. So California makes it very easy to register. They make it very easy to vote. Mm-hmm. And I wish more people did. But yeah, I think a lot of times people are just kind of apathetic.
I think so too. Well, and right now, especially, I mean, I can feel it. You know, I can just feel it. It's as it becomes more and more divided, it's you more and more want to check out.
Yeah, I will say that, you know, before I was like the voting officer for my infantry company, there were like 150 of us on like the small bob, a small base. And, you know, I tried to get everyone to vote. Just, hey, just register, you know, like they'll mail us the ballots, you know, where they make it easy for military guys to register. And I think four or five of us voted. And I will say, you know, and this is kind of how it works sometimes. So anyway, so probably five people voted. We'll say five people voted out of 150, right? It's a terrible turnout. And everyone's like, oh, I'm just too busy. And it's like, busy? We're locked on like a small FOP. Like, anyway, so like the whole, I don't have time for it, didn't apply there. I really don't think it applies now. They mail it to your house. It takes 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But five people voted. And of those five, three or four of us were Democrats. And I can guarantee you that like 70% of the company was not Democrat, right? I mean, like I knew them. I talked to all of them and I still wanted those Republicans to vote. Yeah, you know, it was just this weird little divergence of, oh, well, I'm not going to vote. My vote doesn't count. Well, if that had been a city council, right? And out of 150 people, let's be generous and say there were 30 Democrats in the Army, which is probably more like 20 or 15. Well, we would have had a Democratic city council, right? We would have had, you know, 3 or 4 to 1 and yeah. or 3 or 4 to 1 or 2. And that would have been a majority and it's a complete flip, right? So you scale that out, your interests, they don't matter.
Like, yeah.
Matter if you're like a really conservative or a really liberal person or just a moderate conservative or moderate liberal, like your political views don't matter if you don't vote. And I feel like a lot of times people are like, oh, politicians don't match me. And so I am not going to vote. And that's the opposite of what you should actually be doing.
Right.
Because politicians don't match you, you should vote to get politicians
right.
with you.
Well, and we can say that right now probably more important than ever. Well, I don't know if you can say that, but certainly this is the time where it's easy to check out, but it's really important to vote.
Yeah, this is maybe a good caveat. Like, I think that January 6th was incredibly important. I swore an oath to the Constitution. We have peaceful transitions of power. I've been a diplomat, you know, so I was a soldier defending the Constitution overseas, trying to build a functioning democracy overseas. Failed there, you know, and we had lots of good rules in Iraq. It's just the political parties, they didn't want to take a loss, right? So that's why Iraq failed, because political parties there said, I am only going to represent my people. And if I lose the election, it's because it's rigged. And I'm going to send my people to the streets. And we're going to have a civil war. And that fails, right? And then as a diplomat, I've seen, you know, failed states before. I've seen, you know, broken democracies. Our democracy is incredibly important, something that Americans should be really proud of. And whenever you have a threat to it, we should all come together and say, this was unacceptable. And what Trump did last, basically after losing the election in 2020, was unacceptable. He spread lies about it. He had absolutely no proof. There is no proof because the election was free and fair. People like Doug LaMalfa, you know, our representative that I'm running against, they backed him up. They helped spread those lies. And those lies led to a riot, you know, that almost impeded the certification of election. That is a big deal, right? Like that's a huge deal. And people should be voting everyone involved with that out of office. I don't care I wish there was another Republican running against Doug. I wish that someone had stood up. Obviously, like, you know, the big papers in our district wrote a series of op-eds, like all three, you know, Enterprise Record, the Reading Searchlight, the Chico News Review. They all said, hey, Doug shouldn't be running again, or a Republican should challenge him. I think it's unfortunate the Republican Party has seemed to lose its way, but that means it's up to the Democratic Party and to everyone that cares about our country to vote against those people and to vote them out. And I'm trying to give the pitch that I'm a very good replacement, that I'm a moderate Democrat in a conservative district, but that our district is not a seditionist district. And Doug LaMalfa is a seditionist.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when you get to see people see their colors, hopefully you use your good sense about that.
Yeah, I think we all can see that Doug LaMalfa would be fine with the dictatorship as long as it was Republican. And I think that's really problematic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, because like you said, we kind of have to come in the middle if we're going to get anywhere.
And it's also like democracy depends on people being good sports.
Yes.
You can't have sore losers in a democracy.
Yeah.
Have people saying, well, this election, I don't believe in the results of this election because I lost. That's not acceptable.
Yeah. I mean, we teach our kids that, for crying out loud.
You beat me, I'll be back in 2 or 4 years and I'll meet you on the battlefield of ideas.
Yeah.
But instead, we have a Republican Party that's increasingly just decided that democracy is less important than winning. And that's not what America is. It's not who Americans are.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's not what democracy is.
Correct.
I think they, you know, that's kind of one of those words out there that we speak a lot about it, but, you know, really understanding the principles of it are pretty important.
Right.
We certainly got off track. We are off track.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you want the bio bit. I usually do talk about my biography a little bit.
Yeah, go for it. That's good. Yeah. A little bit. Sure.
So sure. I was born in Sacramento. I live in Chico with my wife. My brother lives in Redding, where he lost his house in car fire and it's now rebuilt. So fourth, fifth generation Californian. So after high school, I joined the Army, did 4 years in active duty. Two of that was in Iraq as an infantryman. I got out, went to school, joined the reserves. So I'm still an Army reservist. So I'm a first sergeant now in a civil affairs unit. And civil affairs, for those who don't know it, the Army does basically refugees and reconstruction. So we're a unit that specializes in that. But I also became a diplomat. So that was my full-time job. I served in Honduras as an agricultural officer. I then served in Mexico as a visa officer and consular officer. So I did visas in the morning. And then I helped out Americans that got sent to prison at night. There are a lot of Americans that go to jail in Tijuana. And then I was a peacekeeper in Egypt. So I basically I was there. So we helped implement the Camp David Accords. Mm-hmm. And then I got out, I went to RAND. I was a defense analyst, and that's where I was, took a leave of absence from that to run mm-hmm. this camp.
Wow. A lot of experience on how to be with people.
Yeah. And also just experience in the broader world. I mean, you know, our district's interests don't stop at the district line. They don't stop at the national border. You know, we can see there's a war in Europe right now. It's having effects on gas prices. It's having effects on inflation. You know, obviously there's trade supply problems throughout the world. And this is something that having that knowledge of how the world works, having that knowledge of how our military works overseas, I think it's that kind of breadth of experience is something that we should ask for out of our congressmen and out of our representatives.
Mm-hmm. So let's see, I know that you have a website.
Oh, it's maxsteinerforcongress.com and the FOR is spelled out.
Okay, so Max Steiner, S-T-E-I-N-E-R.
That's right.
For, yeah. Spelled out, congress.com. Information there, places there where you can support, get a sign in your yard, you know, pay attention.
Yep. I hope everyone listening to this radio program at least votes. And hopefully you'll vote for me. Part of your privileges is being an American.
Yep. And you are so right. Okay. Well, great. Max, thanks a lot. I appreciate you.
Thank you very much, Bobby, for having me on.
Okay, great.
You just heard a pre-recorded interview with Max Steiner, who is running for Congress here in our district against Doug LaMalfa. His website is maxsteinerforcongress.com. Thanks for listening to North State Give and Take, and stay tuned for Ginger.